And welcome into another edition here on 760 WJR of Gridiron Rap. And in case you were not listening to the news at the top of the hour here, you know it's a big thing when the national newscasts are mentioning a game coming up tonight. And
yeah.
Bill Keenest.
Yeah.
Listen, the schedule makers have a unique sense of humor, do they not?
Wow.
What a coincidence that Tom Brady finds himself in a position to pass Drew Brees tonight in Foxborough. What a crazy coincidence that is, huh, Bill?
It really is. And kudos to the men and women of the NFL that put the schedule together. I happen to know them and work with them in my new role. And it's a Herculean task, to say the least. It's not all computerized, as some might think. There's a lot of, blood, sweat, and tears maybe that go into that. But when you think about the national games that the league has had through the first 4 weeks of the season, perhaps topped off by tonight, which a lot of people, Sean, are predicting will be potentially the highest rated regular season game in NFL history. And in today's world, the higher ratings, that was decades ago when there weren't as many opportunities as there is today for entertainment, if you will. But if the game gets close to that, and it probably will, because, we always say the only true, real life soap opera is the NFL. The only true reality show is the NFL, or sports, for that matter, all sports, but certainly within the NFL, and especially for a game like tonight.
I want to talk about the Lions and what transpired today, and something that Bill and I were both talking about. Generations have a different team, a different rival. And the Lions for the longest time, who's been their rival? We'll ask you guys, and Bill and I will share our thoughts, but you brought up something, and I want to stay right there for a second. What people don't understand, and I'm using me as an example. I did not understand until I got into this business, and then years into the business, when I got a closer look, whether it be doing the TV down at Ford Field or doing radio at Ford Field, whatever the case may be, how much goes into the game day? And you mentioned so many of the behind the scenes people that we don't even know about, but game day operations and so many things that go on week in, week out in the National Football League. And as the another reason why I bring this up is you were a part of that down in Cincinnati this past weekend.
Yeah, right? I was fortunate to work the Jacksonville Bengals game for the NFL as the national game rep. And you're working with the green hat referee on the field, the TV truck, the producer, director, associate director, just to make sure all the commercials get in, when you take them, when you don't take them. But it was wonderful being back in that environment again. The stadium was packed, and it was a wonderful game. I mean, it went down, obviously, to the last play. And those two young quarterbacks, Sean, oh my goodness, they are the future of the league. Boy, are they impressive! And Trevor Lawrence really showed me a lot in that game for a rookie. And Joe Burrow, only in his second year, led the team to the winning points when it counted. And then the neat thing for me, and you can relate to this too, because over the years, when in our previous roles, we get to the stadium early, we leave late. We got work to do. There's never any traffic, which is nice, but it's 2 or 3 hours after the game ends. Well, in my role, I'm basically done when the broadcast signs off, when the game's over. And I was actually staying at a hotel across the river in Covington, Kentucky, where a lot of fans stay. I mean, it's essentially Cincinnati. And so I exit the stadium, and I had decided to walk. I was going to walk after the game, just to get some fresh air and wake up a little bit, I suppose. It was a long day, but everybody's exiting the stadium at the same time, and there were almost 99% Bengal fans, as you would expect, and they were so happy. They're singing. It's like what you see, fan bases going into a soccer game. Who they think gonna beat them Bengals? And everybody's cheering and happy and smiling. And then there's a pedestrian bridge that crosses the Ohio River, And we're all on that bridge walking across. And it just, you know, underscored and reaffirmed what we've talked about the first couple of shows, you know, how important sports are to a community, you know, at every level. Even in the NFL, you have fans that just live and die with their teams. And to sort of be caught up in that after the game was really kind of neat, because we don't get a chance to do that often.
No. Bill, I always bring this up. I don't know if you and I have ever had this conversation, but our mutual friend Tom Kowalski loved it when I told this story. 2009, I used to, back in the day when my son was younger, I would always take one game where I said, I'm going to do TV, and then the rest of the day, I'm just dad. I'm going to the game. Uh-huh. And in 2009, we went to that, as you well know, that famous game against Cleveland where Stafford, the shoulder and everything. Yeah. And I'll tell you what, the celebration in the stands that day, it didn't matter that was their second win of the year. It didn't matter that it was their last win of the year.
No.
It didn't matter that, a year earlier they went 0-16 and they were about to go 2-14. Yeah. That moment, that day, especially being there with my son and his friend, it was, I'm serious, it was one of my favorite memories because it was a, those kids were so excited, and there were 50,000 of their friends at that game that were just so excited because the Lions won a dramatic game against a bad team. It didn't matter if they had the two best teams in the league or the two worst teams in the league.
That's right.
It's special. I don't care what anybody says. It's a special, special thing.
And that's something you and your son will talk about for years. And the uniqueness of that game, I mean, that's a historical game in many respects because of the wire that Matthew wore during that game. And Steve Sable, God rest his soul, who went into the Hall of Fame, NFL Films, he had said repeatedly that was the greatest wire they did in their history. Oh. I mean, that's up there pretty high. And I'll give you a little backstory on that, Sean, if I might.
Yeah.
So as part of the NFL Films arrangement with the league and with all the teams, head coaches and quarterbacks at a minimum are wired at least once or twice a year. So with Matthew, of course, being the number one pick that season, you know, I knew NFL Films would, you know, want to wire him. We wanted to wire him. So they came to me early in the season and I forget who we were going to play, but I didn't have a good feeling about the game because in a perfect world, right, Sean, if we can script this stuff, okay, we want it to be in a win. We want it to be a last second comeback for the ages, right, Scott? Sean? So I made up some sort of true excuse. Well, that game's not going to work. Okay. Yeah. So then we moved on and then they picked another game. And I think it was the week before Calvin gets hurt. And I came up with another excuse. I'm not going to have Matthew wired in a game where Calvin's not playing.
Yeah.
So I told them on Monday, and they were not happy with me at all. So I told them, we'll do the Cleveland game. And Cleveland was having a rough year, but I thought we had a chance, right? I thought we had a chance. I said, we'll do the Cleveland game. So wouldn't you know? And then being the PR guy, I guess, you know, you can't ever get that out of you as the game's clock's winding down. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, he's wired. This is going to be classic. And then sure enough, you know, what happened and it was magical. And, you know, I know there was a lot of talk last week about the timeout that Dan took, you know, on the last series for the Ravens. Well, as you may remember, and this just made the wiring and the filming even more dramatic, Matthew throws that pass, PI in the end zone, which you hardly ever have on a Hail Mary. I mean, you hardly ever, but it was truly PI. And his shoulder goes out. So he has to get helped off the field. They have to call a timeout, which means he has to miss a play. And he's laying on the sidelines, and they're working on him. And Eric Mangini calls a timeout. Mm-hmm. And Matthew, and some of it was edited, I believe, told everybody, get off of me. I can go back in. And he goes to Scott Linehan and says, I can throw the ball. I mean, you can't script it any better. Oh. You can't script it. And so he goes in, throws the touchdown pass. and to Pettigrew. And, you know, he comes off the field. It's out, my shoulder's out. And it will live for the ages.
It was. Yeah. And I'll tell you what, Bill, being there, I didn't know any of that. When you got home, it grew even by more titanic proportions. It really did.
And one other thing I remember, we get in the locker room and it was euphoric. I mean, we had seen something special. Everybody understood and agreed to that. And I guess, you know, maybe there's a little bit of, I don't know, grasping the moment, if you will, but Matthew and I talked afterward and I said, I want you going in to do the press conference just the way you're dressed. I don't want you getting cleaned up. Now, provided that the trainers allowed us to do that,
because
to me, I want more people than just his teammates to see what this young man went through. And so he went in, you know, with the shoulder wrapped and everything. And then we did his press media session after the game.
Can't believe it was 12 years ago.
Oh my gosh. I mean, that is incredible.
It seems like yesterday. Yeah. We'll talk a little bit about what transpired today. Talk about rivalries as well. Yeah. Cause I have a theory about rivalries. I think they're generational, and we'll explain it when we come back. Yeah. He is Bill Keenis. I'm Sean Bellegian. You're listening to the Gridiron Wrap right here on 760 WJR. Mm-hmm. All right, quickly before we get into some Lion chatter, always like to keep people up to date with what's going on. Ravens are on top of the Broncos 23-7 in the waning moments of that one. Looks like the Broncos are going to lose their first game of the year. The Packers have a 27-17 lead over the Steelers. 3:45 to go at Lambeau. Seahawks hang on to knock off the Niners 28-21. The Cardinals improve to 4-0 with a 37-20 victory over Matthew Stafford and the Rams. Stafford did his part, however, 26 of 41, two touchdowns and 280 yards. Rams fall to 3-1. Of course, earlier today, the Lions fall to 0-4. They lose to the Bears at Soldier Field. And one of the things that Bill and I wanted to touch on is my generation, Bill, I grew up in a day and age where, and I've admitted this, I told Joik Bell when he went to play for the Bears, I can't stand the Bears because I envied the Bears. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
I watched the Bears in the 80s get this brash coach by the name of Mike Ditka and become a powerhouse.
Right.
And I'm still surprised they only won one Super Bowl, but they were the measuring stick when I grew up. So for me personally, I couldn't stand the Bears. Whereas my son and his generation, they all hate the Packers. They think that, you know, Aaron Rodgers is the spawn of Satan. I mean, all of that stuff, you know, I mean, it's stuff that fans do and everything. But Lions, Bears, and your time working with the Lions and your time with the NFL, that was always a special game, whether it was at the Silverdome, whether it was at Ford Field, and certainly at venerable Soldier Field.
Absolutely, Sean. And when I first joined the Lions, that was 85. That was the year of the Bear. And, you know, there only have been a couple times that I can recall looking at the opponent and not necessarily, I mean, obviously I'm not playing, but you could still feel the tension, you know, in the air. And they were intimidating. They were absolutely intimidating when they walked down that tunnel. And in the first game, the first year rather, with them, we played the final game of the season in the Silverdome, sold out. And that was the game Wilbur Marshall hit, sacked Joe Ferguson, got him right under the jaw, knocked him out cold. And I think Refrigerator Perry picked up the fumble, and David Lewis, a tight end, I believe, finally caught up with him without him scoring a touchdown. But the Bears had that aura. I mean, and I think it was the characters of the team. And you had the extremes. You know, Mike Ditka was an absolute character. And the one thing I'll never forget, as will most of America, our great season in 91, we went in Buffalo on Sunday. And if San Francisco can beat Chicago on Monday night, right, we win the division and we get a bye. And the one thing I remember is I think on the plane ride home from Buffalo, whatever, I'm calling, I guess it would have been ABC, and at that time. I'm pretty sure it was ABC saying, "You guys, we're going to have a team event at the, remember the Main Event restaurant in the Silverdome?
Yeah.
That's where Wayne had his Monday night show with Mark Champion." And so, and it was packed that year. Every Monday night, they would keep expanding the banquet room, you know, taking out the portable walls so they could get all the fans in there. So here we are. Monday night, if San Francisco wins, we're going to finish in first place, get a bye for the playoffs. And the 49ers had a couple rough losses that season, a Hail Mary loss. I think it was to Atlanta, just some inexplicable games. They were a really good team. And they probably had something to show on Monday night that evening. And they rolled the Bears. So after, like I said, a lot of arm twisting during the day, ABC agreed to send a live camera to the event. And of course, Wayne Fonts being Wayne Fonts, right? So when the game gets out of hand and it's basically a done deal, Wayne sits back, pulls out the biggest cigar you've ever seen in your life. He knows he's on camera. He knows the whole country's seeing him. And he lights that thing, says, "Ah, thank you, 49ers. And I'm sure Mike Ditka was watching that. And Mike wasn't, you know, too happy with that. So when you think about the characters in that era, Mike Ditka, Jim McMahon, oh my goodness. And then the other extreme, Walter Payton, you know, one of the best people players ever. Right. Historical franchises, the Halas family, the Ford family, all those factors go in. So, yeah, early on, to me, it was the Bears. The Packers weren't that good in the mid to late 80s. The Vikings were up and down. They were always competitive. I remember, you know, and talking about the intimidation of the Bears. I remember it might have been earlier that year. It could have been 86. We went into Chicago, into Soldier Field, and our O-line was really banged up. And we had to sign a guy, I think, on Thursday or Friday. And, Sean, he ended up starting. His name was Ray Snell. Aww. He was a guard from Tampa. Aww. Had played in Tampa. I think he went into that game weighing 230 pounds. That's no exaggeration. And it was just a manhandling. But then as the decade, you know, went on, we got better and better. And then we were toe-to-toe with them. And we had some classic games. We had some just, I mean, the 92 opener after this Wayne lights the cigar game. That was the game that Barry had that highlight run where he gets spun around behind a pack of players, comes off the pile and goes for a touchdown in the last minute of the game. But the Bears ended up coming back. Jim McMahon throws, I think it was Jim Harbaugh throws a touchdown pass to, I think it was Tommy Waddle. Last play of the game, they beat us by a point. But so many games like that, you know, over the years with the Bears, during that era especially.
Great memory. That was such a dagger in my heart to start the 92 season.
Yes.
Bill, I want to go back to the Thanksgiving Day game beforehand in 91. Yeah. It is one of my favorite games ever because of the reasons that we spoke of. The big bad Bears came into town. And the Lions outbared the Bears on that Thanksgiving Day game. And I just, I'm not going to lie to you. My friends and I, we were waiting for the other shoe to drop. We were at the Dallas game a couple weeks earlier where they pounded Dallas. Right. And then the horrible situation with Mike Utley happened. Yeah. And you were wondering aloud, you know, which direction is this team going to go?
Yeah.
And they showed everybody what they were playing for and what they were all about by punching the Bears the way they did in the mouth that Thanksgiving Day. I'll never forget that in 91. Never.
No, that was a magical day, certainly, Sean. And go back 4 days, 5 days prior to that, we play at Minnesota. It's our first game without Mike. And Barry runs wild. Barry put the whole team on his back. Had four touchdowns, 220 yards. Just some of the classic, I mean, Barry Sanders runs. So now we got the Bears on Thanksgiving, short week, Madden and Summerall, the whole thing. And I mean, that was an incredibly emotional win at Minnesota, as you would expect, because of what you just said. You know, until you know, you don't know how a team's going to react to something like that. So we're coming back on the plane from Minnesota, and I'm starting to, you know, prepare for the CBS crew coming in and the short week and production meeting is that this, that, and the other. And I'm thinking, I had an idea. So I wrote out a short speech for Mike Utley. And the thought was, and I went right to Lomas. He was the only one. I said, Lomas, what about reading this to Mike before the opening kickoff? And he loved it, of course. And so the idea was, I knew CBS would love it. I mean, that's drama at the highest in our sport, right? Mike's in a hospital room, paralyzed, and now you're going to greet him, right? And the whole country is going to share in that greeting, essentially. So, you know, wrote the speech out on a napkin or something on the plane. I just remember that. And gave to Lomas, and, you know, he was all with it. CBS loved the idea. I know we had to get approval from the league. I don't think they could say no to something like that.
Sure.
Even though it wasn't consistent with the normal pregame timing. And I thought, you know what, the Bears probably won't like this. Not that they weren't compassionate, you know, regarding Mike's injury, but the expectation was that the crowd is going to go absolutely nuts. And that's exactly what happened. Loma started, hey, Mike, we know you're listening. We want you to know you're a bigger part of this team right now as you've ever been. Thank you for your strength and your inspiration. We love you, Mike. Thumbs up, Mike. Blah, blah, blah. The place. You were there, Sean.
I was there.
It erupted.
It was unbelievable.
And then I don't think the crowd stopped cheering. We got the opening kickoff. Mel Gray took it like 50 yards to set the stage for that game. We scored on that opening drive, and you're right, we punched them in the mouth that day.
And
that set the stage. We didn't lose a game the rest of the regular season.
Yeah. Oh, it was awesome. Hey, we're up against a break. I do want to ask you about one of the moments and you know, yeah. Talk about, you know, the whole rivalry thing. If you ever got the feeling that there was a rival for the Lions, but I want to get your thoughts on one of the more, how can I put it? Infamous moments. The Take the Wind game Chicago. Got to get, because I know you were there. I'll get your thoughts on that. Who can forget that one?
Right.
He's Bill Keenest. I'm Sean Bellige. And this is the Gridiron Wrap on 760 WJR. You know, Bill, I was just thinking during the break, we're going to have to maybe do one of these a week, because there are moments with some of the coaches during your tenure that have been so debated, hotly contested and debated, whether it be Bobby Ross and the 2-point chart, we ain't scared, challenge flags.
Yeah.
But Take the Wind was one of those moments that,
and
I'll say this, Marty Morningwig was such a nice guy. Always liked Marty, always liked Marty. And obviously there's a reason he stuck around the league as long as he did as a coordinator. The man knew his stuff, but you kind of had a front row seat for that, didn't you?
Yeah, sure did. And of course there's always a backdrop to every game. I mean, that was the Sunday before Thanksgiving, right? So we're going to have the nation's eyes upon us in a few weeks on Thanksgiving Day, or a few days on Thanksgiving. And we were in the midst of what would become an all-time NFL road, consecutive road losses. Okay, so we had a chance to break that record that day. And the game was at Memorial Stadium at the University of Illinois, because Soldier Field was getting renovated. The new Soldier Field was being constructed. And so the game's on a college campus, a smaller stadium, but intimate, you know. And the University of Illinois is, I think it's in the middle of nowhere, because it's just flat land for as far as you can see. And consequently, as the game started and the weather front came in from Siberia or wherever it came in from, the wind started picking up and picking up and picking up. And I do not remember any game where the wind was like it was that day. It was incredible. And so just some forgotten or unknown, you know, facts about that game. There were probably 6 or 7 scoring drives in that game. And the Bears, I believe, scored first. And they scored going against the wind. But every other play in that game, every other score in that game was with the wind. So the wind was a factor, either, you know, unknowingly or just, you know, in reality, it was a factor. And we were leading in that game 17-7, I remember, late in the third quarter, early fourth quarter. Jim Miller ended up coming in off the bench to replace the Bears starting quarterback, you know, Waterford's Jim Miller, Michigan State's Jim Miller. And he's leading the Bears back. And on what could have been, should have been the Bears' final drive in regulation, it was a fourth down. We stopped them. Game over. We're going to run the clock out and win the game. Okay. We're up by, I think, three at the time. And fourth down, Jim Miller gets the shotgun snap, goes back. Robert Porche, our Pro Bowl defensive end, beats the tackle, and he is coming right at Jim. And Sean, Jim Miller, as he's going out of his, out of the pocket, slips. He slips, falls, right on the turf. Robert runs right past him. Jim gets up and completes like a 15-yard pass for a first down. I mean, you tell me, right? Aww. I mean, it was over.
Yeah.
So it goes into overtime. So again, the final score of that game, I think, was 20-17, and there were six or seven scoring plays in that game. And up to overtime, all but one was scored with the win. The last two times we had the ball in the fourth quarter, we punted, and the punts were like 20 yards. They would go up and come right back down. So the win was an absolute competitive factor in the game. No question. So they tie the game on the last play of the game, literally 0-0-0. Paul Edinger kicks a field goal. Game's going into overtime. Captains go out there, and the wind just getting stronger as the day goes on. And we do win the toss. Marty takes the win. And yeah, there was a unique reaction to that. Okay. But I contend, Sean, that that was not the wrong call. That wasn't the wrong call. Okay. And here's the rest of the story, if you will. So we kick off, and the Bears are marching downfield. They have a 3rd and 8 on our 35 going into the win, right? Incomplete pass. It's going to be 4th and 8. Holding on the Bears for some inexplicable reason. And I think I could say this, Marty, why'd you take the penalty? So instead of it being 4th and 8 from the 35, there is no way they're going to line up to kick a 52, 53-yard field goal into that wind. It's a no-brainer. He's going to punt the ball. Yeah. There's no question he's going to punt the ball, right? Marty, I think Dick Geron was the head coach of the Bears, actually. So they're going to punt the ball. And some will say they saw the punt team coming onto the field for the Bears because they were convinced we're going to decline the penalty, make them punt, and then we're going to have the win, our offense. But Marty took the penalty, pushed him back 10 yards. So now it's 3rd down again and 18. Jim Miller hits a receiver for like 15 or 16 yards. So now it's 4th and 2 or 3. Hey, let's go for it. They went for it. They got it. Yeah. 2 or 3 plays later, Edinger kicks the game winner. And to me, the mistake wasn't taking the wind. Mistake was not staying true to your conviction.
Yeah.
Being the wind.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
They're not going to kick a fifth. They're not going to attempt a, because we would have had the ball on the 43 wherever the kick was missed from. And then the other part of that aftermath of that game, I mean, you talk about, oh my gosh, what do we do now? We got the national broadcast coming in on Thanksgiving, went right to the office, and we started researching the PR staff. And I'm telling you, Dan Reeves, Tom Landry, Bill Parcells, Hall of Fame coaches have taken the win before. But it didn't seem to matter when we tried to present that argument, because when you lose a game and you lose it in that fashion, it's hard to make a defense for that. But Marty wasn't the first, I'll say that. And to me, the mistake that he made was taking that penalty more so than taking the win.
You know what? I'm going to bring his name up again. Killer. Mm-hmm. I was doing the post game show, and Killer called in. He was our correspondent and everything. And Bill, as God is my witness, and I don't know if you guys ever had a conversation about this, he feels the exact same way that you did. And I can say,
I don't remember that.
Honestly, this is what he said to me. Dude, I'm here. Okay. You're in the studio. You're warm. I'm here. Dude, I'm telling you, listen to me.
Yeah.
I can still hear it. I mean,
that's awesome. I didn't know that.
Down that was the right That was the right call because of like the conditions at that field that day.
Yeah, it was. And if you were there, you can understand it. It was just a non-conventional decision, but it had, if he had, you know, had the conviction to stay with the decision.
Sure.
Who knows what might have happened, but
you brought up an interesting point as we were talking, because it's I think a lot of Lion fans are, okay, who's the one team you get fired up for? You know, I'm going to say the Bears. You know, my son's going to say the Packers. Maybe somebody plays the Vikings. But you brought up a good point when you asked the other teams in the division. Okay, and then even going back to the days of the Central, you know, you as you said, you asked the Bears. They're probably going to say the Packers.
Yeah,
the Packers are going to say the Bears. Maybe they say the Vikings. The Vikings are probably going to say the Packers. It's nobody picks the Lions.
Well, I think we understand that. You know, you got to earn that. You got to earn that. Now, in the way back, you know, the 50s and 60s, the Lions and the Packers. Sure. Holy mackerel! You talk about an epic rivalry. I mean, we used to play the Packers every year on Thanksgiving. Until we kept beating them. And, you know, the story goes that Vince Lombardi went to the league and petitioned them after the infamous 62 game when they were undefeated coming into Tiger Stadium. And we had 11 sacks and just destroyed them. That was their only loss that year. And 26-14, Roger Brown had 6.5 sacks. God rest his soul. He just passed away recently. Mm. And it was just one of those. And talking to some of the players from that game, there was no love lost between the Lions and the Packers. And the game meant so much because everybody knew, the whole country was watching.
Yep.
You know, your family, your friends, your neighbors, your colleagues throughout the league, your college teammates, high school teammates. So it was a really special one.
Great stuff. Always a pleasure to hear some stories from Bill Keenis. We've got some more before we get out of here. Talk a little college football as well. Yep. Don't you go anywhere. One more segment of the Gridiron Wrap. So glad you could join us. He's Bill Keenis. I'm Sean Belegian, and you're listening to 760 WJR. So we go to the break, and Bill mentions to me that he's got a story about Wayne Fonts and John Madden, and there's no way I'm letting him go to get away with not telling that. Bill, when you want to talk about personalities in this franchise or any place, Wayne Fonts had it. I mean, he just had it. Yeah. One of a kind. There's
one
no
of
other
a kind.
Way to say it.
I think that's his middle name. I think it really is. but you know, we were talking about Soldier Field and some of the memories, and one that I'll never forget. It was the '93 season, and we had to win three of our last four games that year to ultimately win the division, which we did. So we had beaten the Cardinals out in Arizona, then got blown out by the 49ers on a day that Steve Young and Jerry Rice, you know, put on a clinic. I don't think anybody could have beat them that day. So now we're going to Chicago, and they're in the hunt. It's the day after Christmas, Soldier Field, weather, all that stuff. And so We land, get to the hotel, and Wayne tells me he's not feeling well. And I go, what do you mean? I go, I don't feel well. I got the flu, or, you know. And he told me, he said, I can't do the production meeting. I go, Wayne, look, just come in for 5 minutes, okay? You need to talk to Madden and Summerall. We got to give them that courtesy. And they like you. They want to talk to you. So we're staying, I think, at the Hyatt on Michigan Avenue, and all the holiday lights are out, you know, on Michigan Avenue, and in our room overlooks all the festivities. And so we're waiting for Wayne. He comes in with an overcoat on, a scarf, you know, he probably had Vicks and cough drops and, you know, putting on the Ritz, Wayne. So he walks in, and it's obviously he's not feeling very well. So Madden goes, hey, what's wrong with you? He goes, oh, I got a flu. And John goes, oh, you need a hanger. And Wayne goes, what? Oh, you need a hanger, coach. I used to get them all the time. So what's a hanger? So then the meeting becomes Wayne and John telling it, it's an IV. You know, they get the hanger and they twist it around and put it over a, you know, some kind of pole or rod. So Wayne, John goes, yeah, just get a hanger. You'll be fine. So that changed everything. So we did the meeting, you know, Wayne went to the trainer, got a hanger that night. The next day in Soldier Field, I walk into his little office. There's an apparatus with a hanger. Wayne's getting another hanger before the game. And you know what? we won that game. Oh. Eric Lynch, remember Eric Lynch from Grand Valley State? Barry was still hurt. Barry had gotten hurt on Thanksgiving that year. So Eric Lynch, I think I know he had over 100 yards. He probably carried the ball 30 times, and we beat the Bears in Soldier Field, thanks in part to John Madden's hanger.
Isn't that great? Oh, yeah. I love that stuff. Oh, yeah. He is one of a kind. Have you talked to Wayne? How's he doing?
He's doing okay. I mean, he's getting up there in years.
Yeah.
But he's still Wayne. Saw him the last time we played at Tampa toward the end of the 17 season. And he's still Wayne. One of a kind. Yeah. One of a kind.
There's no doubt.
He's got to be happy about his Spartans.
Yes. Boy, what a segue. Are you a radio pro?
How about that?
Bill Keenis getting it done. Very quickly, in case you guys haven't heard it, the latest rankings came up. The Spartans move all the way up to number 11 in both the AP and the coaches poll. And Bill, get this, Michigan at 9 in the AP and 8 in the coaches poll. But you've got 5 Big Ten teams in the top 11 in both points.
Isn't that amazing?
Iowa at 3. Penn State, you're our Penn State insider. Yep. Ohio State at 7, Michigan at 8 and 9, and Michigan State at 11. 5 teams in the top 11 for the Big Ten. Wow. Yeah.
That's all you can say is wow. And, you know, what Coach Tucker has done at Michigan State is incredible. I mean, and the thing that I see with that team, and I think we also saw some of that with the Wolverines Saturday, that team believes there is a connection that he's created with those players. And you need that. You need that, Sean. Every great team has that. It's, you know, it's a love for each other. It's a desire not to let your teammate down, your school down, your coaches down. And you see that with the Spartans. And then the thing that I thought may have been one of the highlights of the weekend was when, you know, up in Madison, they start playing jump around between the third and fourth quarter, and no one's jumping around more than the Wolverines.
Yeah.
How awesome was that? And I don't know, and maybe you know, was that orchestrated? Was, hey, here's what we're going to do? Or did they just do it? Either way, it was awesome, because you got to just imagine how those fans were. What are they doing?
Yeah,
they can't
right?
do that.
Yeah.
Yes, they can. and then they win their first game in almost 20 years up there. Yeah, I
think they were exercising some demons. I really,
absolutely.
You know, they have been pounded a couple times by Wisconsin.
Yep.
I think they were exercising some demons.
And what an impressive start Iowa's had. They're sort of sneaking behind, you know, and wow, are they playing some good football?
The second half of that game. I was in Marquette over the weekend, and we got in late, and I caught the second half of that game, and they looked awesome. And Kirk Ferentz always has good teams.
Yes.
But it seems like, boy, Bill, it seems like every few years he has that team, you know, and this has the looks of that team. I want to go back to your comments about the Spartans. I had a chance to talk to Adam Rittenberg for the Spartan pregame show.
Right.
And, of course, Adam works for ESPN, and he was specifically the Big Ten, and now he's national. And he said the exact same thing that you said about Mel Tucker. He said, you can see how the guys believe in him. And he said, people nationally are talking about it. It's not just using the transfer portal. It's getting some of the recruits that he's able to bring in. And it's exciting times here in the state. And, Bill, I don't care who you root for, and I make it no secret who I root for. We all win when you have two darn good
no
teams.
No question. No question.
I'd rather see a strong Michigan any day of the week. Now, I want to see that strong Michigan team lose, of course, but I'd rather see you know what? I want to see two good teams. We all win.
Absolutely. And that's what makes a rivalry, when you have two teams competing at the highest level against each other. And I always felt that with respect to the Michigan-Ohio State rivalry, I always felt when it was really humming along, which obviously it's taken some hits recently, but when I got here, you know, through the early 2000s, I always felt that obviously there's no team Michigan would rather beat than Ohio State. Okay. But I also always felt that there's no team they would rather lose to, that would not want to lose to, more than Michigan State, not Ohio State. I felt that there was something unique about Michigan State. Michigan wanted to beat Ohio State in the worst way, but the team they didn't want to lose to, was Michigan State.
You got
and
it.
And I think this year, you know, certainly had them both at the top of the mountain so far is just wonderful.
It's amazing. The past 12 years, I always use the term world turned upside down because it was a birthright. You beat Michigan State. And that certainly hasn't been the case.
No.
Boy, time flies when you're having fun.
Boy, it does.
It's always a play. You and I are both, I think, heading to the same place to watch the Patriots.
Yeah, a little football.
Yeah,
a little
the
football,
Patriots and Tampa are going to be a little interesting tonight. Tomorrow night, of course. Classic matchup, Raiders, Chargers as well. Bill, always a pleasure, man.
Yes, sir.
Look forward to chatting with you again next week. And
absolutely,
we want to thank Jason Fischler as well for everything that he does back at the WJR studios. And most importantly, thank you most of all for tuning in. We're going to work on some guests and a few things in the next few weeks. But in the meantime, you know, we're always going to be talking football here. So glad you could join us. It's the Gridiron Wrap right here on 760 WJR. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.